Good morning, everybody. My name is Drew. I'm the pastor here at Hope Heights. Thrilled to be here with you today. Had the chance, our family had a chance to be out of town last week, and it was, we missed you. Also, it was nice to get out of town for a week. We were swimming in the Mississippi. And we got, no, I texted a friend last week and said, hey, we're swimming in the Mississippi. And he said, how many diseases did you get? Zero. So, good news if you want to swim in the Mississippi. Our family's been loving watching the Olympics. It's been something that's kind of on our minds a lot because we're excited. It's incredible to watch people do things I don't understand even how people flip 12 feet in the air without any type of help. They just run and jump. People run so fast. It's incredible to watch someone do something the fastest that's like ever been done in history. That's incredible. And even watching the opening ceremonies, if you watch it, there's this moment where they all came in front of the Eiffel Tower, and the announcer said, you know, there's nothing else in the world in all of history where there's so much joy and unity in one space. And it did have that feeling right in that moment. It might be a little bit of an exaggeration to say that, but there is this incredible amount of things that happen. And one of those things, I think, and the word that I keep hearing as we're watching interviews of people after they win, even after they don't win, just being there and watching the crowd, everyone around seems to have this thing that we like to call joy, right? This excitement, this happiness, this kind of euphoric moment that they feel this great amount of joy. And as we here this summer have been going through a series looking at the wisdom books, a lot of Psalms, we see a lot of that same kind of language in the Psalms. And so today I wanted to take some time for us just to think about what actually could bring us joy. What is joy? How do we get joy? And maybe what does a life of joy look like? It's a word that's used a lot in Scripture to describe what it looks like to be someone who follows Jesus, who has a relationship with Jesus, who's in the church. And so what does that look like? And maybe even help us understand a little more what Scripture actually calls us to, what it looks like, rather than just maybe what we see, which is incredible events, right, in the Olympics and great joy in people. But what does it really look like to have a life? So hopefully today, as we look at Psalm 126, we can understand that. We are in a series we're calling Wisdom and Songs, Gospel Mixtape. And so we're looking all summer essentially at what our mixtape of the gospel would look like as we look at these songs that were written in the book of Psalms. And we saw Ecclesiastes, and there's some Proverbs. And it's been really great to hear from different people. Last week, Pastor Steve was here sharing as well. So we're going to look today, though, at Psalm 126. I've been reading, I shared, I think, last time in Psalm 121. I've been reading the Psalms of Ascent. And so these are songs they believe were sung by people as they took a pilgrimage, as they went up the hill to Jerusalem, songs they sang about God's deliverance and who he was. And so if you can imagine that, a lot of these are shorter, and they're these great songs. You could picture people like walking together, singing these words that are expressing who God is, who they are. And so today we have another one of those. Another one of their kind of mixtape as they took their road trip to Jerusalem, whether it's to a festival, to give a sacrifice, to see family, as they all went there together to worship. This is one of the songs on their mixtape. So let me just read Psalm 126 to us. And then today, hopefully, we get a chance to think about what does joy look like and what does that look like in our lives? How do we get that and maybe even sustain that? So let me read this for us if you just want to follow along. This is Psalm 126. When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dreamed. Our mouths were filled with laughter, our tongues with songs of joy. Then it was said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us, and we are filled with joy. Restore our fortunes, Lord, like streams of the Negev. Those who sow with tears will reap with songs of joy. Those who go out weeping, carrying seed to sow, will return with songs of joy, carrying sheaves with them. It's a great picture in this psalm. Great pictures of a few things, but it has this great explanation, right? Of God has done these great things for his people, and they're laughing. They're so joyful, they're laughing. It's like they're almost in a dream. And so this psalm gives us two things that we're going to look at today. What God has done and how that's led them to joy, and that a look forward to what God will do. And so let's start with just what God has done so we understand a little bit of where is this coming from? Why are they filled with laughter and joy? Why does it feel like they're in a dream? And so the beginning of this, when the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dreamed. This phrasing, those who dreamed, would be a phrase, even we still use a phrase like that, right? It's like I'm in a dream. I couldn't have dreamt of this would be a phrase. You might have even heard that as you watched the Olympics. People said, as a kid, I dreamed of this moment when I stood here with a gold medal. This is them saying, we were enslaved in Egypt. God rescued us from there. We were in the wilderness and God gave us a home and brought us back. God restores his people. He's a God of restoration, a God of redeeming, even when a lot of those were our faults. Like even as we turned from God and walked away from him, he still rescued us, ran after us. It's like we're in a dream. Can you believe it? There's a God, a creator, who we sinned against, and he still comes and rescues us. It's like a dream. It's incredible. You're so joyful, so excited, so happy, so filled with hope that you can't not laugh, that you can't not even burst into a song. Maybe you've felt that experience in life. There's lots of places we might see this kind of experience happen, right? Obviously, in the Olympics, we see these moments of just laughter and singing almost, moments of I can't believe it. This maybe is a way that people have described their wedding day. It was like a dream. I can't believe this moment. I can't believe I'm with this person. I remember this being said when we got to go to Disney World, and I think that explains it. Actually, a family who's not here today because they're at Disney World sent me a video yesterday. They surprised their kids and took them to Disney World yesterday. I got a sweet text with that video of them in the airport, and they're like, no way, no way, no way. We're really going. They're so excited. I can't believe it. It's like a dream, right? Or maybe just traveling. Have you been somewhere incredible, standing in front of something? And how many years have I dreamt of being in this place, seeing this thing? This is like a dream. It's incredible. We're there. Or maybe if you type in dream job, you get this terrible photo, but I had to use it. This guy, right? He's feeling it. This is a dream. Even though I'm pretty sure he's photoshopped. I finally landed that thing I've been looking forward to, the thing I so need. I got it. It's like a dream. I'm singing songs, or there's moments where you're just with family or friends and you go, I can't believe this is my life. I can't believe I have these people who love me, who care for me. Maybe you get to experience like a hint of that feeling that we're seeing in Psalm 125, even of being restored or redeemed, right? These are people who I've sinned against and they still have brought me in. Or maybe we've had some trouble and now we're together though. We're still here. We're still doing this together. It's this incredible moment, this deep foundation of kind of joy. Now I wanted to figure out like, there's a difference though, right? Maybe you've heard this if you've been in the church. People really love to talk a lot about the difference in like happiness and joy. And I actually just looked up, I'm like, how do other people think about joy? And there was some things written from some doctors actually at Mayo who were explaining to people how they get like joy. They live just a joyful life, how important it is even to their health, their physical health and their mental health and all that. And actually, one of the doctors here at Mayo, just down the road, explained what joy looks like. And I think it's actually very similar to what the word joy means in our passage here. Happiness is an emotion, whereas joy is more of a state of being. It's more of like a kind of continual, more connected almost even to your identity and how you always are, not just kind of a momentary thing. When you are joyful, it doesn't mean you are always giddy or happy, but it means you can appreciate moments of happiness with the bigger context of life. I mean, it's very similar to the definition I looked up as I'm looking up in my Bible dictionary. What does joy look like? It's really not an explanation of a momentary like burst of something exciting or happy. It's actually more of the state of being. And actually, the word joy is used as one of the words for Christians. We see it as the fruit of the Spirit. One of them is joy. These are things as we follow Christ, as we're changed and our hearts are changed and our minds are changed. It's more of a place we kind of live in. It's more of a change actually like in our whole health of who we are and our spiritual health. So joy becomes like a sustaining thing. It becomes a thing about contentment. It becomes maybe less of like, everything's okay all the time and it's going to be great. And you're like, it's not though. It's less of that, right? It's really not that. It's a continual kind of state that we're living in and that we are. It makes me think of a moment that we had in our house. This was a few years ago, and the Youngs were at our house. If any of you have been around a little while, Caleb and Annie Young, who are here, they've now moved to St. Louis. They're in our house with our girls, and their girls were about the same age, and their kids are running around, and we're in the kitchen, and our girls ran in for like their fifth run at the box of fruit snacks. If anyone's had this at their house, if there's fruit snacks, someone figures out where they are, and then there's like a heist planned, and the kids like run in and some distract us while the rest of them grab handfuls of fruit snacks. And Annie decided it was a great moment to explain the difference in sugar and protein. And so she stopped the girls and we had this moment where she wanted to explain what fruit snacks do to you and what proteins do to you, which is this great, sweet parenting moment. I don't know if it lands, but it was a sweet moment. So she was explaining like, hey, you could keep coming back for your fruit snacks. And in that moment, you get excited and you feel all giddy and you run out and you jump on the trampoline a bunch more. And then you kind of start feeling weird. And then you run back in and get more fruit snacks. She's like, but why don't we eat some meat here or some protein? And so she's trying to encourage them to eat some nuts and some beef sticks we had. And she's like, because a protein is going to like sustain you. So she goes, I need you to have less roller coasters and more like long haul train rides. And at least I learned a lot in that moment. I was like, thank you. That helps me with the temptation of fruit snacks, which is true, right? So you keep eating your fruit snacks. You get kind of tired or you're feeling weird. So you go throw some more fruit snacks in it, which there's sugar in fruit snacks if you look at the package. And you get this like high, right? You crank up the roller coaster and then you kind of crash again. And life kind of, your day kind of can be the up and down, up and down, up and down. Or there's something about eating food that sticks that kind of sustains you for the long haul. Now, you might not get the burst of excitement of a fruit snack, those sweet, chewy little fruit snacks, but you get this long haul. And so I love that picture of like what it looked like to board the train that's going to go across the country and get me to Seattle, right? Or was it look like to go on the quick ride up and down, up and down? And so I think this even as we think about joy, joy is explaining this state we're in, this long haul, this sustainability of real contentment, of a happiness, of a joy, of a hopefulness that we see in a believer. And there's a reason why we have it. It's something that keeps us going and isn't just a quick fix of something. And so as we look at this passage and we hear the author explaining, hey, if you imagine them marching, singing their mixtape, their playlist here, they're saying, Lord, you have restored us to the fortunes of Zion, to Jerusalem. And it's like a dream. I can't believe, God, you keep redeeming us. You keep bringing us back. You keep rescuing us. And it brings in the moment a euphoric, probably like just incredible that we're walking to Jerusalem together and this is real and true. But it also brings a stability in like we're going to keep moving forward with this joy and contentment that's different than if we just have quick bursts of a little fruit snack in our bodies. It really kind of caused us to ask that question because I think it might not be fruit snacks, but there are many things in our lives, I think, essentially, this is a way we almost could define sin or idolatry in our life. Like, this is the life of a person, right? Do I keep running after these things that quickly maybe bring euphoria, excitement, hope, to like hints of hope? They bring acceptance or comfort in that moment. And then I find myself crashing again, like going back down deep, and then I got to find another thing. And it's a life of like up and down and grabbing for different things and looking for different things, rather than what we see in Psalm 126 is looking to the Lord, who's the one who has rescued us, who's brought us all those things. And in the moment that might not feel as top of the roller coaster, but it's going to sustain us through and get us to the end. And so it's a question it's helpful to ask. Where are we turning for our quick artificial joy? What are the things that we're looking to quickly kind of quick feel good and right and everything? And it's like tiring. And thanks to Annie, we learned even if you had a life where you lived for 40 years and all you ate was fruit snacks, that would probably be it. 40 might be the end of that long haul, right? Where rather you eat like a balanced diet and you're feeding yourself to be healthy and sustain yourself for the long haul. It's so similar, right, to even our diet. It's our spiritual diet. And so the psalm goes on. It continues to talk about this great thing. And it makes a really interesting point here. We're not going to spend a lot of time here, but I think it's really helpful to understand this. The Lord restores his people. He brings them back. He welcomes them back in. As a father, we see like the picture of the prodigal son. He runs to him and embraces them and brings the family back together. And what joy, what an amazing thing to have, to know we have a God who does that over and over. And it gets noticed by the nations around. So the joy actually that kind of becomes us, part of just who we are now, is joy-filled people. Not giddy, like goofy, like, yeah, everything is perfect, but just there's a joy about us, a contentment about us that gets noticed actually around us. I think if we think of like things like evangelism, which a word we use to say, like, how do we share the good news with people? This shares the good news with people. I'm sure you've been around people or are that person. You know, there's something like peaceful about you, joyful about you, content about you, self-controlled about you. The fruit that's the Spirit are being shown and the people notice around you. Have you ever had this happen? I remember having this happen. My parents just were like ones who loved inviting friends. They're like, hey, have friends over and care for them. And I had a friend who did not have a great relationship with his dad, and my dad would invite him over and we'd hang out. And essentially we'd throw the baseball around and hang out. We'd drive around he'd let us sit in the back of his truck. That was cool. And I remember my friend, this is when I was little, I remember my friend saying, man, I wish I could be in your family. It was really just like, I think he loved having a dad figure who loved him and people who loved him, and it wasn't quite as chaotic or hard to be in our family. But I think this is what happens, right? The nations, the people around see that we have a Father in heaven, this God who cares for us in this way, and they see the joy in us, and they say, man, those people have been restored. Those people, their God does great things for them, and there's great joy. Just as you're thinking, how do I share my faith with people? There's a part of that is us in the way we're living in a content life because we're on a steady diet of what the Lord has done and what he's doing in our life that is seen around us. So that first part is really this, God has done these great things for us and we are filled with joy. And we're singing as we approach Jerusalem. We're singing as we walk up the hill. Our God has done great things. What he has done is great. And then they're thinking about the future now. And they're hitting on some very real things. Restore our fortunes, Lord. Well, it says he did restore their fortunes. Now they're saying, I still need you to restore our fortunes. Like streams in the Negev. And that's a picture of a place. Negev is actually the name of a region. It's the deserty, dry area around there. And this gives such a beautiful picture. It's these dry riverbeds that for a lot of the year are just barren. Dry, dusty, seems lifeless. But then there's these times where the Lord makes it rain and then beautiful flowers spring up. You should look it up. You should look up Negev flowers. It's these cool pictures of like you could see where the riverbeds are because there's these like beautiful red and purple and there's bushes that sprout up. And so they are walking in a place and have lived in a place where it's deserty. It feels dry and lifeless. And then God provides rain and all of a sudden beautiful things spur up. So it's hard. There's hardship, there's suffering. All around there's death. But they know that God can bring rain that will bring these beautiful things and bring growth in life. They know this is actually what life looks like. God has rescued us. We have great joy, and we still have joy even though we're walking into deserts, even though we're walking into suffering. So this passage gives this picture. Those who sow with tears will reap with songs of joy. It's a passage in the reality of life of there is suffering. I'm going to have to move towards hard things. And what do we do with that? We move into them. God doesn't, in our joy, we don't go, I'm going to avoid those because they're going to be hard. In fact, joy is what kind of carries us through. Again, if we're on our train and we're traveling, we can go into these hard places. The joy can still sustain us in those. Even while we're suffering. If you guys have noticed, Aaron, one of our elders who preaches sometimes, has two tattoos on his arms, and they mean like sorrowful and joyful. And he has them because he's like, this explains what it is to be a follower of Jesus. A life of sorrow and hard things and a life of joy all together. You know, and one day, one day we're going to have to cut his arm off when Jesus returns because then he just will have the joyful arm. Not really. But that it's such a great picture. It's such a reality. We're not saying to have joy in your life means cut out everything that might make you suffer, that might be hard. It actually says, as I enter into those things, I pray and ask God to water them, to use its suffering. He's not wasting that suffering. That those who go out weeping, carrying a seed, God can water and grow and can return with songs of joy, carrying armfuls, right, of the harvest. So we see this beautiful picture here of joy comes from remembering what God has done and then leaning in and holding on to him, knowing he's the one who can, as we continue to move into suffering and hardship, can be the one, even in our tears, he can grow joy out of that. It's built on what he's done and will do. It's not just an intellectual concept of like, I can think about this and understand this. I can just meditate on this idea. It's not like a dream board, or we're not like manifesting like, okay, I just got to keep thinking about joy every day, the things that bring me joy, and then it will happen. But we actually know from scripture, joy comes from this, and ultimately we now, many years after Psalm 126 was written, know even more. Because we know that joy is a person. It's a person who actually came and suffered deeply and has come out with great joy and has offered that great joy to us. We know that joy can transform us, can stabilize us, can comfort us. Joy will satisfy our deepest desires in our life because we know joy, this person, understands this. In a very real way, and actually the language of Hebrews 12 says it's so great. It says, for the joy, as it talks about Jesus, for the joy set before him, Jesus, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus, like, acts out Psalm 126. With his tears and suffering, he plants a seed that then grows into great joy. And he knew, because he's God, what was happening. We didn't know. We just saw another terrible, tearful moment. But he knew this tearful suffering would lead to great joy. And not just for him, but for all of us, as he went to the cross to bear it for all of us. He's the one who actually has won the race. As we celebrate a race watching the Olympics, and we watched the women do the 4x400, and they like destroyed everyone, and I'm in my house, yes! And they're like, we did it! And they're like, well, I'm sitting on my couch, I didn't do it. These incredible women ran very fast. But there's this, now, in an even greater way, in a more real way, Jesus runs to the cross, takes our sin, and now today raises from the dead and sits at the right hand of the throne. I mean, it's like a picture of the Olympics, except the ultimate Olympics, right? He went ahead of us, sowed those tears, and has kept joy for all of us. And so then the rest of Hebrews, the beginning of Hebrews 12, is what our life now looks like, right? Therefore, since we were surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, it's a picture of a race of the Olympics, right? Let us throw off the things that hinder us, the sin that so easily entangles. Let's throw off our fruit snacks. See, I don't need that. I'm going to I'm going to run. I'm going to hold on to the thing that's going to sustain me and get me through. I'm going to run with perseverance the race marked out for me, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. It's not a race like I'm going to go win the race so I can get joy. It's that someone has already won the race who now gives us joy so that I can even finish the race. I can't even start the race without his life, without him giving me life and creating me. And all that is because the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Growing weary and losing heart would be what steals my joy. That's what it looks like when my joy has been stolen. I'm tired. I'm ready for another fruit snack because I got to get that going again. And then that just cycle, right? I got to stop and grab an energy drink quick to like get going again, rather than this race of clinging to Jesus, running after him and being able to be sustained through really hard things. Another place we see this is actually a command in Philippians. Towards the end of the book of Philippians, which is a book about joy. If you want to think about joy this week, read the book of Philippians. It'll help encourage you, challenge you, I guess. It says, rejoice. Like actually act out joy. Rejoice in the Lord always. What are we rejoicing in the Lord? I'll say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. This feels very Psalm 126. The people around us will even see the joy and the gentleness that comes from being in the Lord. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. This is the second half of Psalm 126. It says, do not be anxious. The author knows being anxious about something, the root of that often can even be like fear, right? If you want to think like, what's not joy in my life? Well, when I'm fearful, when I'm anxious, when I think that thing could happen, or this thing did happen, and now I'm thinking about the thing that did happen, or I'm thinking about the thing that all the possibilities of things that could happen, it could harm me or hurt someone else, and you're tied up in that. And so now your train is kind of slowing down. The tracks aren't going right because the fear now is what's sustaining, actually slowing us down, rather than a joy. And not that just being in the Lord it eliminates any anxiety, but if you think of what happens when we start thinking about what's fearful, what's coming after us. And in Psalm 126, we're told, they pray essentially the second half and say, God, it's going to be hard. There's tears even, right? And we know that you can still bring joy in the midst of that. And so this prayer in Philippians is, it says, go to the Lord with those things. Trust him from what he's done and what we know he will do. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Another way you must to define joy is the peace of God that transcends all understanding, a thing that guards my heart and my mind. This is what M. Sidney Park says about this passage. I really like it. It's helpful to me to think about. For those who walk apart from the cross, obviously the call to renounce all self-privilege and self-promotion is daunting and painful to embrace. So if we don't know Christ or don't understand the gospel, then this seems silly to say rejoice. Like, turn from yourselves. The book of Philippians often is calling us to look to others, to care for others, to be servants as we're created to be, right? And so to not have self-promotion or self-privilege. So it does feel painful. But if we know Christ, for those who do walk in the midst of the cross, there's a toll on the soul in the constant disposition of humility, humiliation, and self-sacrifice. For both joy is a salve to all obstacles to cruciformed life. I really like that. If you think it's like joy, by rejoicing in what God has done and what he is doing and what he will be doing, it actually is this like healing. It's this protection as we move into all these obstacles. It's imperative to rejoice often in the knowledge of God's sovereignty and promises of deliverance. So rejoicing isn't just God did things and so now I can be happy. It's actually like an action. It's actually part of a behavior that we can move towards as a Christian and say, rejoicing is saying, God, you've done great things and you are going to do great things. And it's part of what heals us and gets us through hard things. It's different if we don't have Christ. And for us, if we keep reading in our Bibles, we actually know how this all ends. And so we can know what God has done. where he's at right now with us, and we know where this is all going, which brings great, great joy. If you think of the destination of the train, as we weave in and out of mountains, as the tracks get a little snowy, it gets a little scary, there's some fear in there, we know where we're ending up. We know where the train finally lands. Revelation 19, we hear, let us rejoice and be glad and give him glory. There's still joy there. I mean, I can't imagine what joy is going to feel like in heaven. For the wedding of the Lamb has come and his bride has made herself ready. Fine linen, bright and clean, is given to her to wear. Then the angel said to me, write this, blessed are those who are invited to the wedding supper of the Lamb. And he added, these are the true words of God. Joy is knowing God has restored us, that he will restore all things, and that he has given you an invitation to the wedding supper of the Lamb. A picture of Jesus, a lamb who was slain for us, for our sins, so that we could have life, who throws a party in the end, invites all of us there to celebrate, to just real joy. Can imagine what the celebration's like in an Olympic village, a night when people win a gold medal. They talk about, like, the village is going to be loud tonight. Can you imagine the celebration one day? We gather around the one, the joyful one who has rescued us and calls us to be within the rejoicing that would happen. Then this is what the vision we have, not just what he's done and what he's doing, but where he's bringing us. This is the vision for Isaac Watts, who many, many years ago wrote the poem Joy to the World. We know this, right, because we sing Joy to the World. He wrote a book of poetry. Isaac Watts wrote a lot of our hymns, or at least the words to a lot of our hymns. And he was reading Psalm 98 and Psalm 126 and some other psalms. And he was reading Revelation. And he said, oh, the day when our King returns, what joy the world will have that day. And so he wrote a poem called Joy to the World about this king who will return. So he wrote a poem about what will happen, this king who will return, and the joy that day that we'll have. And so later, somebody actually came and took those words, and it was around Christmas time when they found that poem, and they decided, what a perfect Christmas poem. Little baby Jesus, our king, has come. And so we sing it at Christmas as a, rightfully, right, as a great hymn, that Jesus has come. And Isaac Watts originally wrote it because we will get to sing it one day when our King actually comes back and we fully feel the joy. And so that's what we get to kind of live in now, right? This is from Psalm 89, 98. But we get to feel it. So this is essentially what our life is now as a follower of Jesus. It's a life where we get to say, Jesus, you have come and rescued us. And Jesus, you're going to come and rescue us. We get to continually live in a place where, God, you have come to restore us with joy. And that sustains us. So it's a question to ask ourselves. Do you have a joy mixtape? Not an actual mixtape that says joy. You probably don't even have a tape deck to play it in. But do you have does it run through your head and your heart? Do you have what has God been doing? Maybe specifically in your life, what has he done at a grand scale for all of us, but even in your life, how has he restored you? Has he cared for you? Has he loved you right now? And then do you have one that of looking to the future? As Isaac Watts wrote, joy to the world. Do we have that? I also have that. I have this joy of all the time that I get to hold to that will sustain me. R.C. Sproul says he likes to think of joy as like, how does joy then work in my life? And he likes to use the word joy. So this is a little corny, but great. He says, where do I find joy? So then how in my life, in the moment, each day, how do I actually continue to hold on to that joy? And so he says, first you go to Jesus, then others, then you. Isn't that great? And it spells joy. He says, this is what we first go, what has God done? Where has he brought us? What has Jesus done? The one who knew the joy set before him and he endured a cross to rescue us. Can we remember the gospel? The pathway to joy is first remembering Jesus. And whatever we counter, as our tears come down, as we're sowing seeds of suffering, we remember Jesus. And then he says, we're created to serve others. Fear, anxiety, fear, sin wants us to move towards ourselves first. He says, what if you first move towards Jesus and then you move towards others? What does it look like now to move towards others and serving others? And lastly, you consider, what does this mean for me, or how am I a part of this? And he says, all of this gets messed up when we have yoj. I don't think that's the word, but it's fun to say, yoj. He says, this is our normal operating system. Something happens, something comes at us, we feel fear, and we say, okay, what can I do? How am I a part of this? I got to figure this out. I'm not going to be able to figure this out. The fear might even grow because we think of our part in it, and we think, oh, I made that worse. I'm going to make this worse. Then we look to others, and now in this, instead of starting with Jesus, others actually become a place we often just use, can use people. How can I use you to solve this problem? How can I use you to bring happiness to myself, to bring contentment to myself? How can you please just do this thing? Because then I'll feel content or safe or fearless. And then lastly, we might go, okay. And then, of course, like Jesus, I've figured it out, and these people have it figured, and now you can hop in. He becomes an afterthought, really just there to serve you in the places you couldn't figure out. He's kind of your sidekick, your co-pilot. He's like the little brother that tags along. That doesn't bring me joy. If I see Jesus, lowercase j, tagging along, I'm like, okay, I guess I have to bring you along because someday I'll get to heaven and I'll need to make sure you're there to let me in. Rather than understanding that joy comes from a consistent look to him, a playlist in my head, the mixtape of God rescue me over and over and continuing to, and that one day will restore all of this. And so it changes our day. We might even have more yo days, right? We might have some yoj days. We might just have days where you just go, I don't think. And then we kind of feel ourselves crash. We got to run to our fruit snacks. Instead, R.C. Sproul encourages us, what does it look like to have joy? It looks like looking to him every day. This is essentially, right, preaching the gospel to ourselves each day. And doing that with others, sometimes I need the others so badly to remind me of the J in my life. And then together we can work. God will work on me and work in me. You see this, like this steady joy in people's lives when you actually get the chance to hear like an Olympian who just like destroyed records. Someone who was like the fastest person in history, and they interview them, there's a different like contentment and joy in them when they know the Lord. And this happened throughout the Olympics. I'm so encouraged by these. They really kind of settled me and stabilized me because I go like, oh, I've never worked that hard and gotten that good at something. And who am I and what am I doing? I'm yoging, right? Instead, these people are people who go like, this is incredible, but the Lord is just so good. I'm actually going to invite the band up here as I read this. This is from Sydney. She's the one who is like unreal, if you watch her. She just beat her own world record for the sixth time. This week, she in the hurdles, she ran the 400 hurdles, and they showed a list of the top 10 fastest people ever to run the hurdles, and she's the top eight. Like, she has the 8 fastest times ever. Like, unbelievable how fast she is. The way people look up to her, the way she's worked so hard and for so long. And she wins a gold medal again. Yesterday, she wins a gold medal with her team and the by 400. And her response to that is this joy. That's not like it's just euphoric. This is the greatest thing ever. This is the greatest thing in my whole life that will ever be. There's a stability in it, a real joy. And this is, she throws this out. She goes, hey, I just want you to know what my life looks like. I just wanted to read this. I think this is a little bit of what that looks like in real life. Be what it looked like to start with Jesus and others and ourselves. This is her response to winning again. She says, what an honor, a blessing, and a privilege. I never want to take these moments for granted. In a week where my faith was tried, my peace wavered, and the weight of the world began to descend, God has was beyond gracious. Smiley face, little big eyes. It's always hard preparing for one moment you may or may not get back. In my mind, what kept repeating were the words, trust in Jesus. I didn't know what the outcome would be, but I did know he was who I wanted to lead me through the journey. What an amazing journey it was. And it never ceases to amaze me how powerful he is to help those who trust in him overcome the battles within. His word is sufficient. His promises hold true, and all the glory belongs to him. Pray, hands up, heart. At the end, I like just read this. At the end of the day, it is far beyond gold. Once again, I'm immensely grateful to have the opportunity to represent my country on the world's biggest stage. What a blessing. Then she quotes Psalm 115, not to us, O Lord, not to us, but to your name, given glory for the sake of your steadfast love and your faithfulness. Amen, amen. I think that is a response that looks like someone who has joy, not just that moment, but has like a steadfastness. And it comes because she clings to the one who is steadfast, who has already gone ahead of us, and that we can hold on to and hopefully have great joy. I want us to take an opportunity for a moment. I think it's really helpful for us. Maybe you can find the same people you had question of the day with, but instead of us just reflecting today in a question, I want us to, we're going to start a time of worship here. We're going to sing some songs together. We have an opportunity to take communion, which we do out in the hallways. You can take communion. You have to be a member at Hope. We just ask you're a follower of Jesus. And just as Christ has commanded us, he said, take the bread and break it, drink the wine, and to remember the sacrifice he's made. Remember the suffering he went to, the cross. So his blood was shed, his body was broken, so we could have life. We take communion. That's out in the hallways. You can do that. You can give out in the hallways. That's an opportunity. Or you can give online, a way to respond to the gospel. We'll sing, and we're going to pray. There's people in the back of the room who would love to pray for you. They have yellow lanyards if you want to be prayed for. But first, I just want to take a couple minutes. This can be really important for our joy mixtapes, is to not just remember what God has done in your lives, but to hear what God is doing in others' lives. And so I'm going to ask us just to stand up in a moment and maybe find the same people you already know now that you're best friends with because you talked for 4 minutes. Find those friends. And I'd love for you just maybe to answer these questions. Either one, if you're comfortable, hopefully maybe one of them you'd be comfortable with. What's something that God has just done in your life? Just real quick. Hey, this is the thing that God has done. It's incredible. He's restored this, or he's sustained me through this. Just to hear from each other these things. So there's more tracks on your mixtape, remembering what God has done, which will essentially hold our joy in us. Or maybe share something that you're praying for, even look into the future. What's something that you're asking God to grow? Something that tears have been planted with, and you're looking for God to grow, and they could even pray together. So I'm gonna ask you just take a few minutes right now. Stand up, find some people you're by. It's an opportunity. We don't always do this, but at our church, to just share with each other. And then in a few minutes, the band's gonna lead us in a time of worship together.